Hello, welcome to episode 67 of What We're Listening To. My name is Josh. I am one of your hosts. And with me is a large, detuned aluminium truck bed, Asher. Hello, how are you doing, sir?
Oh, you watched most of the documentary.
Boom!
I mean, we'll get to it. But for all of, like, the grittiness, it was still very squeaky clean production.
Yes.
I wanted more of a rustic truck. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, we'll get to it. That's a reference to some of the found sounds included in the album that I've been listening to this.
Yes.
This episode.
But before we get there, I do have a quiz for you. And I've managed to weave it somewhat adjacently to The Simpsons, one of my personal favorite topics. So in our giving of homework, I asked you if you would like Cat Stevens or James Taylor. You elected for Cat Stevens. This is the question about James Taylor.
I think I know what you're going
to
say.
So he appears in a Simpsons episode. I want you to answer for me. What problem does he help solve for Homer? And who does he credit with giving him the solution?
So Homer's got the ants that are loose in the... the shuttle or whatever it is.
Correct.
And he's trying to play them some music to calm them down, and he sings that, like, planes and something in pieces on the ground, but he changes the lyric to something else.
Sweet dreams and flying machines in pieces on the ground.
That's right, in pieces on the ground. Flying safely through the air. I can't remember. Is he calming down the ants? I can't remember what the deal is with what he's doing.
Okay.
Let me just try and guess. Homer cracks his head into the ant colony. And no, I don't remember. It's been too long.
So James Taylor says that him and Art Garfunkel got a large pressure hose and made a vacuum to shoot all the ants out of their vineyard one year. And so he tells the astronauts to, like, open the door of the space shuttle and suck all the ants out of it. Anyway.
Is that, like, at all, you know, is there any grain of truth in this? Does he even know Art Garfunkel?
I mean, he probably does. It is James Taylor in the episode, so I'm assuming.
Yes,
I'm assuming he does. I just think it's so stupid. And he gets, like, snippy with Buzz Aldrin because Buzz is like, we have a bit of a situation. I hope you can understand. You don't necessarily need to hear a song right now. You're going to sit there, hover, and enjoy what I'm going to play.
That's right. And they're all just like bobbing up and down in zero G.
Classic.
With the ants
classic
all around
Simpsons.
The place.
Anyway.
Yeah, I just saw a clip today of... You know, the Shining parody.
Okay.
You're going to get us sued. It's the Shining.
It's the Shining boy.
Like, he keeps busting through the wrong doors too. Anyway, that was Treehouse of Horror or something.
Otherwise.
Classic.
Do you have any catch-ups, sir?
Yes, a couple of things.
Ooh.
Bier has finally given in to our demands, Joshua. It was definitely us which made him press those vinyl. It wasn't his popularity or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely our pressure on the podcast all those eons ago. But
our demands and hunger strike.
That's right, yeah. Bier has pressed 100 copies of Self-Titled, and I am the proud owner of one of them. Well, I'm the proud pre-orderer of one of them. It will arrive around Christmas time. I'm very excited. I'm very excited too because it was $5 shipping in Australia. Woot. Not $70.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm giving up buying any physical media unless it's like close by. It's crazy. Anyway, so yes, I'm very excited about that. Did you have anything? It's too far away for you.
Yeah, I can't have anything.
Secondly, maybe we'll touch on this, or maybe this is, I don't know, this is a bit of news. Bandcamp has been bought by another company. I'm going to try and not like rant the entire episode. I mean, look, in the same way last time, it was like, well, we'll just continue on until things change. So far, things have not changed, but SongTrader are interesting and hopefully their values align with what Bandcamp want to do and all that sort of thing. But it's always weird and reminds you that these are companies and you have no control over them. So whatever.
Yeah, and it's frustrating when a thing that is working perfectly fine, you know, gets bought and then essentially ruined for no real reason other than money. And you're like,
yeah, I mean, it hasn't been ruined. It's just the kind of like signals of, like it just reminds you that like any platform is very transient kind of thing.
Yes.
Even though I really like Bandcamp, it's ultimately at the end of the day, like will pass away like everything else. It's very solemn-like of me, whatever. That's my only follow-up in news. Did you have any?
That's it for me too.
Didn't John Francis Flynn have a new flat track out though?
I mean, that might be an homage. He did have a put out a second one. I haven't listened to it yet.
No, neither did I. Just because. The mole in the ground, we enjoyed, and then he's got this wily crotty, which I haven't heard yet, but I wondered whether you would follow it up. But we can leave that, that's fine. All right, shall we head into reviews?
Yes, sir.
So this is the odd one out of our four reviews for today. I was going to talk about Sufjan's Javelin. And by the way, I think I was pronouncing it Javelin last time. I don't know why I thought I saw an extra E in there and I was trying to be intentional, but yeah, I was misreading it. I haven't quite got into it yet, and I think I've just been preoccupied and, you know, not always in the mood for really soft or bombastic songs. So I decided to listen to some metal instead, and I stumbled upon a eclectic metal artist called Igor from France. I think he's from France. Mm. So this album came out in 2020, and it's pretty cool and zany. I found it through a random video clip on YouTube that came up for his track called Very Noise, and it can only be described as like a Garry's Mod fever dream kind of thing, but you know, with very complex breakcore metal underneath it. So this album is called Distortion and Spirituality, I think, or Spirituality and Distortion. Let me double check. Yeah, Spirituality and Distortion. It's a 2020 album by Igor. I think it's like his fourth or something like that, and it seems to be kind of like a collective in some ways. Like Igor is, well, whatever his name is, who heads it up, seems to be a guitarist, composer, but he gets in a lot of session musicians. And when he plays, he's kind of like a DJ. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Yeah, like mostly triggers all these different recordings and samples. He'll have like a guitarist and a drummer on stage, but most of the other parts, including vocals, he'll kind of like bring in via, you know, stems and that sort of thing. So it's kind of not really like a typical metal act. The thing that attracted me to this album was its variety of instrumentation, and like it's not metal straight. Like it's, like I said, it's got breakcore drums in it. It's got like folk instruments and accordion. It's got like very Middle Eastern style vocals, and it's got harpsichord and truck bonnet things and all sorts of stuff. Like I think the whole gimmick is that it's just like the mashup of as many different unrelated instruments in metal as possibly like you possibly could. Like you'll listen to Musette Maxim and it will begin with this like happy polka tune on the accordion, and then like double kick drums will come in and then screaming and all this sort of thing. Like the gimmick is as mash up as many different things together as possible. And Igor did a little documentary and kind of goes into all the like bamboo sticks that are percussion and yeah, smashing a car bonnet and all that sort of thing. But like I was saying, it's funny because like there's so many interesting samples and very intentional like stuff, but it still sounds a bit produced. Like it doesn't sound super gritty. Like I guess he wants to just record everything really well. But sometimes I go, if you're going to make it so squeak clean, just use like pre-recorded samples. Yeah. Like don't go to all the work of recording things from scratch to only have them sound exactly like, you know, a sample pack I could download. You know what I mean? Yeah. Did you listen all the way through?
Yeah, I gave it a go or two. I'll be honest. I wasn't a huge fan of it.
Yeah, it's fine.
I think it's a lot of the sum of the parts don't really equal a interesting product necessarily. Like the mastering and the drums and like the songs don't really go anywhere. Like there's all this kind of creative energy, but nothing ever really happens. Like even like the break beats and the glitch steps and that kind of stuff. Like they're not that, I don't know, they're not that like surprising or interesting. At least for me.
No, that's fair.
Like you kind of read out like all these like Middle Eastern influences and like interesting instrumentation, and it makes me think of like System of a Down. And I was trying to listen to some of them, and like those songs are really like melodically interesting, and they're structured interestingly, and they actually like go somewhere. And I found a lot of the time, like I wouldn't necessarily distinguish this metal album from other modern metal albums necessarily, even with all this like interesting stuff that went underneath it, you know?
Yeah. I feel like this is much less of like a art project in the way that System of a Down are, where they're actually trying to kind of use the instruments to say something.
Mm.
I think that Igor is just having a bit of fun, it seems. Like it's, like I said, it is a bit of a gimmick in some ways, because you've got like Corpse Grinder joins him on one of the songs, and there's literally like at the end there's like a modular synth kind of like chiptune section, and in the video clip there's like a video game version of Corpse Grinder like jumping on things, and you know, and so it feels like there's a lot of kind of PR behind these songs too.
Mm.
You know, with the very noise clip, it's like very kind of postmodern sort of stuff. It's yeah, I don't know. Not that I don't like it. I actually quite enjoyed this, but I kind of enjoyed it as like a example of like what you could do with a whole bunch of different ideas, more than like a, you know, like System of a Down have a lot of deep things that they're trying to say. And so their use of, you know, different ethnic sounds is very intentional and very heartfelt, whereas this is kind of like an ideas album. But I found it interesting. It was cool that the songs were short. Like it didn't feel like they went on and on and on.
Yeah, for sure.
But did you, like, I mean, you didn't really love it, but I found that the metal parts were the most boring, like where they chug away on these chords.
Oh yeah.
Like in comparison to like some of the other things in the songs, it was very boring. Like the bass player was incredible on this. I mean, you hate that kind of bass, I imagine. It's very pluckety, slappety sort of stuff. I dug it. I thought it was like kind of like a bop album. Like it's upbeat and that sort of thing. And I dig that. And maybe that was like something, you know, you've been talking about how I need to jog myself out of my ambience.
Yeah, sure.
There you go. So I don't know. I enjoyed listening to it. I don't know why I kind of got into this, but I just enjoyed the ideas. But it definitely doesn't feel like it's a story concept album.
Mm.
It's very much a, let's throw a whole bunch of things together. And it does feel like a collective more than, you know, a songwriter. Like, I mean, the only lyrics are in different languages except for Parping, which is just George Fisher again talking about corpses and stuff, which is what he does. Yeah. A side note, I went and listened to a bit of Cannibal Corpse as well. They're even more boring.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just that droney sort of, yeah, metal. Not terrible, just kind of like, okay, yeah, sure, that's fine. Yeah, I'm much more interested in the creative elements of Igor than I am in the metal side of things. So, yeah, I'm glad I listened to it, though. Picked it up on Bandcamp. It's good. Yeah, so anyway, that's me. I enjoyed it. Igor. I'll chuck some tracks on. Let's chat about your one, which is more on theme of the episode.
Yes. So I've been listening to the latest album from a singer-songwriter from the state of Georgia called Jake Xerxes Fussell, I think. Fussell? I'm not sure about his last name. Apparently he's been on the tracks.
Last king of...
Yeah, Last King of Babylon. He's been on the tracks a little bit, including like touring for like Bonnie Prince Billy and Wilco and Bill Callahan. So he's kind of been around some of the scenes that I've been paying attention to.
That's great.
Yeah, in the summertime, I usually look for one or two more rustic kind of southern folk albums to kind of listen to on nice warm evenings. Those are unfortunately gone now, but I've still been kind of hanging on to this guy. So I found this a couple months ago and I really, really enjoyed it. And I wanted to kind of talk about it.
It's very beautiful.
Yeah. I think,
and I do love that album art.
Yeah. If you can kind of get past some of the initial countryness of the way he sings sometimes, I think, at least for me, that was like the first kind of jumping point. This album is really, really beautiful.
It didn't bother me.
Didn't bother you?
That didn't bother me.
Yeah, I love particularly, I don't know, it's like strong melodies, especially in comparison to Igor, like a much more less is more kind of approach to writing songs.
You don't say. we need more shredding.
I've always been a particular sucker for like later Dylan style, like straight, clean Telecaster led folk songs. And there's a number of those in this album of like what you would play on acoustic guitar. We play it on electric and it kind of gives a different tone and feeling to it. And I really love it when musicians do that. Mm. And there's a number of those in this. A number of probably highlights for me, Carabelle, Frolic, and the Golden Willow Tree, the 9-minute song in the middle.
Cool.
Yeah. What did you think? You gave it a listen, you said?
Yeah, I gave it a full listen, and I'm looking now on Bandcamp and see that there's like this bigger narrative to it, which I would like to get into, but I just really liked the vibe.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just very calm. I listened to it all yesterday while I was kind of with my kids, and it was just really chilled and relaxing and great instrumentation. Like, I don't know if I can kind of point out things just from a single listen through, but
no, that's fine.
I see nothing in it yet that has like gone, oh, no, I don't like that. It was creative lyrics and... yeah, just an interesting sort of vibe to it. So, no, it's beautiful. I can definitely imagine this being a really lovely... I mean, it's warm here at the moment, so
yeah,
that probably contributed to my enjoyment.
From doing some reading on the internet, supposedly he lends himself, at least more so in his other albums, to being a little more historical. Like, some of these are covers or redos of more traditional songs. But this album apparently is a little more... toned down and I don't know what you say, like calm, like you said. It's a little more off the track from his other records. It was perfect for the place I was at when I found it, so I've been absolutely loving, and I'm kind of waiting to go through the rest of his stuff because this is really, really good in my opinion. Sure.
Yeah, that's cool. No, it was beautiful. I will give it another listen now that I've got this kind of album narrative behind it.
Yeah.
But I like it when there's a kind of a point to it.
But that's kind of all I have to say about Jake. It's really good.
Yeah, cool. That's great. Nice. Well, shall we move on to homework?
Yeah, let's do it. This is another case of, I guess we're just kind of ticking off some legendary albums.
Yep.
I gave Asher the fourth record from famous singer-songwriter Cat Stevens called Tea for the Tiller Man. And after doing some research, this is a bit of a turning point in Cat Stevens' career. He's a bit more of a kind of pop singer before this album, like the song Matthew and Sons and that kind of stuff. So this, after a fairly hefty near fatal bout of tuberculosis, he kind of took a more spiritual, transcendental approach to his music and wanted to kind of make something a bit different. And so he came out with Tea for the Tiller Man about a year or two after that experience of living in the hospital for a couple of years.
Wow.
And I don't think it was super critically well received at the time, but definitely since then has been hailed as one of the better albums ever made. And it has some, you know, humongous singles on it. You know, Father and Son, Where Do the Children Play, Wild World, there's more and more and more. But I think it's a good album aside from even those gigantic hits. So, Cat Stevens, what did you think about this album, Asher?
So, just a bit of background. My first introduction to Cat Stevens was I remember hearing a lot of these covers from a guy at uni who would do lots of folk stuff. And he introduced me to, you know, Father and Son and Wild World and all that sort of thing. And I remember students wanting to learn Sad Lisa and that sort of thing. So I feel like I've heard a bunch of these. And I have this on vinyl because my dad loved it as well. I didn't get a chance to listen to it on vinyl while I was kind of doing my homework. But I will have a listen to it again soon. It's really interesting how harsh his vocal is. Like,
yeah,
when you listen to, like, Where Do the Children Play, like, it, all those takes are so loud. Like, you know, in the Where Do the Children Play, like, it's right at the end. It's so, like, the production of his vocal, very, very intense. And for a folk artist, you know, you kind of expect it to be a little quieter and that sort of thing. but very, very catchy songs, great instrumentation. I mean, it's just great 1970s drums too. You know how I love that. Like,
yeah,
all that kind of dead sort of sound. I must confess, like, the singles are really good. You know, Wild World is so catchy and you get it in your head. What did he sound like before this? Like, what was, you know, what was kind of the vibe of him before? Because this is what I think when I think Cat Stevens.
Yeah.
And maybe that's because it's the most popular.
I mean, definitely this era of him is the most remembered one, aside from, you know, the modern version of him. I think, like, still similar in his ability to sing, but a lot more, like, pop chords and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. So the interesting thing about this is, like, how kind of wise beyond his years he sounds, in a similar sort of way to Simon and Garfunkel. You know, like Father and Son. How old was he when he wrote this album? Because it just feels like an older man talking.
Yeah, and it's like a classic dad song too, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I
guess that's why I put it with Cats in the Cradle. In my head. I'm not sure why.
Yeah. I mean, I personally, I love his voice. I think it was like the first time when I gave Cat Stevens a proper listen as like a teenager, I remember feeling like, oh, actually, I'm really jealous of his ability to like sing like a nuclear bomb in some parts. It's similar to me to kind of the quality that Glenn Hansard has of like, yes, he can be quiet, but it's actually like the dynamic extreme that he has and the power behind even like the top range of his voice is so clean.
I should say I don't not like it. It's more that it's so much more powerful than what I think of. You know, like Father and Son is a little bit more restful, but then, you know, Where Do the Children Play in Wild World? Yeah, pack some punch.
Yeah,
and it's
well, a lot of the time he uses his voice as another instrument because there's all these harmonic and choir kind of backing tracks, which are just him singing again.
Yeah. So he was 22 years old when he recorded Tea for the Tillerman.
Crumbs. Okay.
Like, and that's what I mean about this. I mean, for me, when I come to a folk album, the instrumentation is really important, obviously. And Wild World has some great riffs, you know. Like, it's great music, but it's more about the lyric for me and his voice. And so when I listen to songs like Father and Son, you know, you just kind of wonder how he wrote like that. Like,
yeah.
But it's still, I mean, that's the gift of songwriting sometimes. I must confess, like, I'm not sure I can, you know, tell all of the others apart from each other just kind of from my first listens. But he's just a good songwriter. It's great music. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah.
Like,
I can say a couple of things. I think.
Go.
Well, for me, I can really tell giving it another listen. Like, at some points, the effect or influence this album has on kind of the more alternative folk traditions. Like things like the things that go farther, like Graceland or Bollywood Hula Bard, have like similar roots, I think, to this album.
Cool.
Especially the more other songs like Miles from Nowhere or Longer Boats, which are more kind of choral, rather than the big singles. I can kind of see where this sits for a lot of musicians in some folk circles.
Yeah, and obviously there were other kind of twinges of different folk artists there. I mean, who did Pink Moons? I mean, different style.
Oh, yeah, like Nick Drake and that kind of stuff.
I imagine there's a lot of crossover influence there. Yeah, he's from Britain, isn't he, Cat Stevens?
Yes.
Or Yusuf. Yep. Yeah, cool. No, it was good. It feels so hard coming into an artist like Cat Stevens to kind of get a big picture. I feel like it's like one of those artists I just need to catch up on.
Yeah, I think
gradually.
I think thankfully this album was rather timeless in some qualities. So as you said, you can kind of hop on a little bit, at least for this one.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen some of these other album covers like Teaser and the Fire Cat before. But I've not heard them. Anyway, that's cool. No, I like it.
Tea for the Tillerman.
Yeah. What's that about, by the way? Who's the Tillerman?
Oh, I don't remember. There's a song on the album that it's about. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah.
It's the 70s, man.
Yep. So, do you want me to tell people what I gave you?
Please.
Sure. So, on theme of kind of folky guitar music, I gave Josh an interesting instrumental album by a singer-songwriter, mostly just guitarist, Leo Kottke. So I don't know a lot about him, except that, you know, he's from the US, very good guitarist on both a 6 and a 12 string guitar, and that's the name of the album which I gave Josh, which is the 6 and 12 string guitar album, which I couldn't find on streaming. I could only find it on YouTube, which was funny. Leo Kottke is another artist that my parents liked listening to, and so I grew up listening to this kind of instrumental guitar music. I think I've loved his music specifically on this album just because of the way he kind of treats the acoustic guitar, almost kind of like a harp sort of thing. I think he uses lower tunings, and you know, it's just beautiful finger picking and that sort of thing. It's very, very, very resonant. So I thought this might be a nice album, maybe a good vibe for you. What did you think of the 6 and 12 string guitar, or 12 and 6 string?
Yeah, very interesting. I haven't come across a lot of stuff like this before, though it did remind me, like, the kind of guitar traditions that evolve out of, like, the United States and the Appalachians of, like lots of finger picking and lots of repeated runs kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed the naturality of it, if that's a word. Like every so often you hear, like, sometimes strings will break and the song keeps going, or like it'll pop out of fret and he just keeps playing. And
yeah,
and you're like he could have redone that, but the take is good, and it makes you feel like you're kind of listening to just a one take version of him playing the whole thing for you, right? And I like, normally this kind of realm is like dominated by people like Tommy Emmanuel, which is for me often a little too gimmicky, if that's a permissive way of saying it, even though, you know, easily one of the most talented guitar players to ever live.
I get what you mean.
To call his work gimmicky is an insult. This is like a lot simpler in terms of what it's trying to accomplish than that. And I think for that side, it actually really succeeds. Aside from the one cover, the one version of Jesu Joy, it's all like self-compositions, which I find really interesting, because I kind of don't know how you would write a song like this and like structure it and then the kind of like cut it off and say, all right, this is a song from start to finish, and it's 3 minutes of me finger picking over and over again. And you're like, sure, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose he's soaked himself in that tradition of finger picking and Appalachian sort of playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's kind of a part of his style. And so then it's his first album. So it's interesting.
Like, it feels really old school. And I have a couple records by a new musician, and she is like going through and restoring old kind of American songbooks. And some of the time it's on banjo, but it feels similar to that, even though these are all self compositions. They feel old, which I find quite interesting. I quite enjoyed it. I don't have a ton to say about it. Sorry.
Totally fine.
There's not a ton to analyze in terms of, like, I'm not a particularly adept finger picker analyst.
Well, here's the funny thing, like, you sent me that quote and I realized I didn't know a lot about Leo Kottke himself, and it seems like he's quite a bit of a funny guy. Read that quote you sent me, or do you remember, or do you want me to read it?
You can read it out. I can't remember. It's
from
his Wikipedia page. It's like the second paragraph in his wiki.
Focusing primarily on instrumental composition playing, Kottke also sings sporadically in an unconventional yet expressive baritone, described by himself as sounding like geese farts on a muggy day. And it's funny because, like, I was just looking on the Wikipedia page for this album, and before I get to what I was trying to say, this was recorded in a single afternoon.
What?
In the running order of the album. And most tracks were done in a single take. Kottke doesn't even pause when audibly smacks the side of the guitar neck on the sailor's grave on the prairie. In the liner notes of an anthology, he states, "We didn't know about sequencing, so the record is in the order we recorded it. The record took 3.5 hours to do, and all I had to do was sit down and play everything I knew."
I mean, like, partially that's crazy. That's astounding, because it is super talented, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. It's It's, and then this is, so it says here, every, so he has, apparently, there are notes for every song, and I don't have the CD anymore. I can't remember. Yeah. Each song has some notes, and they're kind of a bit, like, ridiculous. Like, The Sailor's Grave on the Prairie, it has in brackets, originally written to commemorate Nedrick's and a Minneapolis musician's contempt for the 3 a.m. cheeseburger with a nickel slice of raw, whatever that means. Just crazy, like, side notes.
Okay.
What is this? Yeah. Watermelon. While at Watermelon Park Music Festival, I had the opportunity to play banjo in the middle of the night for a wandering drunk. When I finished, he vomited. An astute comment on my playing made me feel very distinguished. So I feel like he doesn't take himself very seriously.
Sure.
But is incredibly talented. And there's an album which later on, when I was a teen, my parents bought me another one of his albums. With a bass player called Mike Gordon, and it's called Clones from 2002.
Okay.
And I remember really enjoying that one as well, but it's different. It's got singing on it. It's got bass guitar and all that sort of thing. And so I think it's a very interesting album. I'll send you that too.
Mm. Please. Wow,
there you go. So strange. I just feel like albums like this need to be dug up again. Like, they're incredible and just very much worth listening to. So.
Yeah.
Glad you enjoyed a bit of it.
Very different.
Hmm. Well, why don't we move on to honorable mentions? We can have this done in half an hour.
Nice and tight.
Yeah, that's it.
Honorable mentions. First and foremost, rather excitingly, there's a new album coming out from our favorite Bristolian punk band, Idols.
Ooh, yes.
It's coming out in February of next year. But they have released a track called Dancer, and I have been loving it. I've given it maybe 10 or 11 watches this week.
I've only seen little snippets, but they look like they're having fun.
Yeah, The video alone is quite a fun, like, it's they like to play, and the full band are in, like, white disco suits and having a good time together. The song itself is killer, and it's also there's a lot of interesting production around this album. You got Kenny Beats is still working on it, but you also have the lead guy from LCD Sound System, James Murphy, doing a number of songs, as well as Stanley Donwood. No, not him. He's the artist for Radiohead albums. My brain is having a fart. The producer for Radiohead is also working on this record as well, which is really good. So it's exciting. We'll see what happens. Interesting sounds are often made when these kind of people come together. So,
And it's called Tang.
Yes. there's a G in there somewhere.
Yeah. I liked that they're selling some tank tops. Their new profile picture on Bandcamp is amazing.
Anything for a pun. And then the latest Slaughter Beach Dog album came out. I was going to review it. It's worth a review, but I think we've talked about them a fair amount on our show. Suffice it to say, this album is great. I've been really enjoying it. It's a little more kind of relaxed than his last album was, but I think there's some very interesting songs in this album, and I'll give it a recommendation any day of the week.
Sweet.
And then I've been in a bit of a Nick Cave mood. So I've actually gone and rented the film he put out last year. It's him and Warren Ellis, his favorite wizard, putting together the tour for the album Carnage that they put out a couple years ago. And it's kind of them doing like stage production and playing songs for the gig, but also like playing them for the movie. It's really quite interesting. And it starts with Nick talking to the interviewer, and he said, over the pandemic, I decided to retrain myself. And so I am now a sculptor. And he kind of points to the wall, and there's always like mini like sculptures that he's made. And it's just like such a weird place to start. Anyway,
he's an interesting guy.
It's a very enigmatic kind of musical thing to be a part of. Like Nick Cave is one thing, and then you have Warren Ellis, who's like this, you know, wily man with a huge beard and a violin, and he's often like sitting down and like kind of conducting with his hands, but still sitting down. He's like a weird starfish man. It's all over the place. It's a brilliant.
Well, he's great in Dirty Three. Yeah, and I love him there. So
it's a brilliant movie. If you want to get a peek at like how they're. Creative process together works in some fashion.
Yeah, that's cool.
This is what I know to be true. And then lastly, this is probably the least interesting for you. I've been listening to a country musician called Zach Bryan, who put out a self-titled album. There's a bit of a major movement happening in popular country. According to some people that I follow and some investigation that I've done into country music magazines, as you would probably know, the last like couple decades of country music has been fairly irreverent, stupid, you know, songs about trucks and being bros and that kind of stuff. All primarily
unaware of that fact though.
Yeah. And all primarily coming out of Nashville. And recently,
yeah, I don't know a lot about it, but yes,
recently there's been a bit of a kind of a movement for a number of independent artists have been exploding in the country music scene, not a part of Nashville, unless they're industry plants, but in that case, whatever. But also like not in the same vein as popular music of the past. It's some writers have coined it similar to the difference between Nirvana and hair metal of the 80s. I think that's a bit of a stretch. But there is like one guy in particular, this Zach Bryan fella. It is unashamedly country music. But it's a little more alternative. It's more self-produced and it's kind of got some indie edges to it. But he put out his album after getting some steam on Instagram and TikTok, and he's just been soaring through the charts and like selling out massive arenas on his first time through. It's kind of nuts. So he's been leading the charge in this kind of new wave of little more authentic, little more less produced country music. So I'm kind of like, this is as close as I'll get to it. Some songs are kind of meh. Some of them are interesting to me. But I've been a little country adjacent recently. I apologize.
No, it's fine. I mean, I know you love sad cowboy music and Wilco's new one before the one that just came out about cousins or something you really enjoyed too, right?
Yeah, I like that. Wilco was a little bit different. But anyway, so those are my honorable mentions. The country world's an interesting place. How about you, sir?
I've got a handful of oddball things. What? The first thing is... yeah, I know, strange. I have mentioned before this this band called Sad Gods, which is like a kind of experimental sound collage thing. One of the guys from Sad Gods, Jonathan Atchley, released a little EP album thing from when he was kind of adventuring in the wild of California. And it's like kind of like a lo-fi acoustics field recording album, spoken word stuff. Yeah, I really dig it. It's kind of like you know, some songs are like crackling fire and poetry kind of reading. Other songs are very long sort of nylon string acoustic intros and then voice, similar to like Phil Elverum, sort of the microphones style.
Sure.
Yeah. But then there's also kind of like field recordings of Moving Camp, which is one of the tracks I really like. And it's just kind of the field recorder sitting in the car as you hear the sounds of him kind of driving to the new location. And it feels very like you hear this story all the way through. And I just really like that kind of thing. I'm just, yeah, in that place in my listening of wanting kind of a sound collage and mixed in with songs and kind of thinking of it as one big song in some ways. So, yeah, I think it's only on Bandcamp, but, yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. It's cool. Another thing that I've really enjoyed is I think I mentioned the first album by this artist a few episodes back. Acousmi is a French minimalist composer. And this, what's funny?
Nothing.
This one is a follow-up album to Fleeting Futures, his previous album. It's called Lines, and it's kind of, it's a very good new minimalist album. So in the vein of Steve Reich and Philip Glass, but probably a lot more appealing, you know, a lot more musical, a lot more kind of harmonically pleasing, less dissonance and more kind of interesting rhythms overlapping each other, but then giving way to kind of like a very traditional sort of chord progression underneath it all. And so that's Lines. It's beautiful. I would highly recommend checking it out. Couple of random things. I've been listening to tangentially related. I've been listening to an artist named A.S. Ember, who is a voice actor, and he's reading Lovecraft and Poe because it's October and I'm listening to that. So it's not music, but in the past he's used some of my music in his stories.
Oh, really?
But in this one, yes, yeah, he's a friend of a friend in Canada. And so anyway, I've been listening to some of his other things and they're quite interesting. There was one story that I quite enjoyed called The Color Out of Space. I think it got turned. You know the one?
I've seen the movie.
Oh, I've avoided it. I checked out the trailer and went, ooh, I'm not even watching that.
Good old Nicolas Cage, baby.
It's amazing how bad that he can make a movie. Like, that story is actually quite intense as you listen to the audiobook. And then I watched this trailer and it just turned out to be funny. So, whatever. Why does he do that? Anyway, and then also related to a movie, I've been watching Eraserhead and listening to David Lynch's soundtrack for it. Did you know he did the soundtrack?
Yes, he does a number of soundtracks for his films.
Yeah, and I've only ever seen his Dune, which I think Toto did the soundtrack for.
Why would... No. Okay.
What?
Of all of his films to watch, why would you watch Dune?
Well, it has a special place in my heart. You know, the terrible trash cinema place.
Yeah, that movie's almost solely responsible for him never having a Hollywood hit ever.
Well, he did, you know, go on to do Twin Peaks and stuff, and that was minorly popular, I think. I don't know. Bier will probably have my head for saying that. Anyway, Eraserhead, the soundtrack, feels really modern for a 1977 film. Like, it's kind of industrial soundscape kind of style, which I imagine would have been difficult to do at the time, you know, pre-Doors and stuff. But I don't know. It's cool. It's interesting. Not what I expected at all. So, anyway, how's that selection of oddball stuff?
It's pretty odd. I'll give you that.
I can throw in one extra one. My daughter has been loving the soundtrack to the movie Brave, which has an Irish artist, Julie Fowlis, on it, and then Birdie and Mumford and Sons doing a song together, which I don't know if that is the most 2012 thing you've ever heard, but it is. So there you go.
Oh, wow.
And what a mishmash of an episode. It's the state of my brain.
That's right. It makes perfect sense to
well,
me.
Well, yeah, good, good. I'll take us out. How about that? Well, thank you for listening to episode 67 of What We're Listening To. Just us chatting about all the random things we're listening to. Josh way more structured than I. But yeah, I hope you've got something interesting out of this. Please check us out on socials and rate us on wherever you listen to your podcasts and check out the albums and support those artists. And yeah, keep sending us random stuff or we will tell you what we discover via the mighty algorithm. I think that's all. We'll catch you around, Josh.
See you, buddy.
See ya.